So, who is your family? Earlier, Poppy asked us, what is a family? And I am adding, who is your family? Of what tribes are you a part? Who are your people? For each of us, the answers to these questions are complex, right? Nuclear, extended, etc. We have ancestral families and families of birth and families of choice and families we've created and maybe families we've only just discovered. We have church families and neighborhood families and work families. In and through this complexity, there is another truth, as my colleague Wayne Arneson wrote in a beloved benediction, which is that while each of us can claim a unique constellation of families, there is one family that claims us all, or to go a little Lord of the Rings on you, there is one family to rule them all. And that is, of course, the family of humankind. I am a living member of the great family of all souls, wrote William Ellery Channing, and cannot improve or suffer myself without diffusing good or evil around me through an ever-largening sphere. When Channing wrote that essay in the early 1800s, his words were his own, but his message was echoing an ancient one grounded in the biblical traditions from which Unitarianism came, but also in the teachings of other world religions. As the irreverent and beloved author Anne Lamott notes in her memoir, Plan B, pretty much all of the great faiths and wisdom traditions maintain some version of the same rule. We are all family. Will you say that with me? We are all family. So in contemporary parlance, a family is a group of people who share a common ancestor, or that's at least one definition. And some religions tend to use that definition as well. In the Hebrew Bible's rendering, our entire family can be traced back to a single starting point in Adam, a word whose origins mean human. And that story rests in a larger creation narrative, which says that everything and everyone in the world comes from this common source, which you could say is the very definition of God. But at the same time, religious institutions have been some of the worst perpetrators of human division, haven't they? Right? Yes. The history of religion is replete with examples of forgetting, ignoring, or defying that rule that Anne Lamott taught us, from the Crusades of the Middle Ages to modern-day fundamentalisms. And of course, as we see on a daily basis, minute by minute, tweet by tweet, it's not only religious tribalism that has trumped human unity. Ideologies and oppressions, some of them relying on so-called religious teachings to undergird them, have sown their share of division. Xenophobia, racism, patriarchy, homophobia, all divide the human family, and not only divide, but divide it into lesser and greater halves, right? Yet for all of these religious grounded desecrations of the human family, I think it's worth remembering and lifting up that along the way there have always been spiritual teachers and reformers who have remembered the rule that we are all family. Jesus and Martin Luther, shout out to my Lutheran friends, Gandhi, Dorothy Day. Is there anyone else who comes to mind that we want to shout out and lift up? Reverend Barber, yes, William Barber is like, thank goodness for him right now. He is preaching. These teachers have stood up, they have preached, they have taught, they have marched, they have organized, they have inspired us, and are still inspiring us to heal and mend the divisions in our human family. And going back a couple of hundred years, it was just such a spirit that gave rise to our own faith. Because Channing and his contemporaries, what made them heretical and radical is that they preached that humanity was united in our capacity to do good, right? That rather than be divided by some being pre-selected, like pre-approved for salvation, and others being predetermined to go to the bad place, the early Unitarians were like, that makes no sense, right? We are one family. We are all family. And the Universalists, who were getting going around the same time, argued that whatever divided us now, whatever fights we might get into with our human brothers and sisters, that a God of love would reconcile us in the end. Have you heard this shorthand for our history that Unitarianism said we all came from the same source? And Universalists said we're all going to the same place. I like that one. It's handy when you're seeing the fellowship committee to get ordained to just like have that in the back of your head. Which, okay, this isn't though to say that though this is our theological roots, this doesn't mean that we always get it right, right? Either as a faith tradition or as individuals, okay? Because we're humans too. And we are tied up in these systems and cultures that perpetuate divisions in the family. So we want to acknowledge that. And we want to lift up and celebrate that to be a Unitarian Universalist is to testify and to say that we know in our bones that what Davies wrote is true, that we are all bound up in a common destiny, right? That we are all family. I am a living member of the great family of all souls. I belong to this family. I am tied to it by vital bonds. Now, Channing wrote those words a couple hundred years ago. And when he was writing them, he couldn't have known that he was not telling only a spiritual truth, but also a scientific one. Because we have since learned that every human being alive today is a member of the same family. So some of you may know, and I know there are probably more trained scientists here than me, but evolutionary biologists, I understand, have traced the DNA back of every living person to a common matrilineal ancestor. Have you heard of her, mitochondrial Eve? Yes, she was our foremother. So mitochondrial Eve lived about 200,000 years ago in the plains of what is today East Africa. And each of us here in our room, if we all got really into ancestry.com but tried to go back like 200,000 years, we would all end up in the same place, which is pretty wild when you think about it, right? And apparently on our paternal DNA side, Y chromosome Adam, there is such a thing too. He lived about 60,000 years ago. So that's just the span of 2,000 generations that we all go back. And it sort of gives a new meaning to that song from Sister Sledge. Does anyone else want to sing it with me? We are a family. I got all my sisters and me. Okay. Yeah, woo. It's a good one. I don't think I've sang that since a wedding or, you know, okay. So, you know, when I think about Channing's words in light of where we are in this moment in human history, and I think about what we are dealing with in terms of climate, I think, wow, how prophetic and important those words are. When he wrote, I am always exerting an influence on my human family, I can hardly perform an act that is confined in consequence to myself, right? It's like he didn't know about our carbon footprints in the seas or the fact that how we heat our homes or drive our cars is affecting people who live on small islands halfway across the globe, right? So maybe you are thinking, okay, I'm with this, but what does this really mean on a practical level, this whole we are family business? Maybe, yes, we are related to every single person on the planet, and sure, I can kind of think about how my actions affect us, but with billions of relatives, it's hard to get our minds around what does this mean in anything other than an abstract way. And if we were fully to embrace that one familyness, what does it require of us, right? Well, maybe we could say that kinship implies a level of heightened concern, but as Poppy sort of pointed out with regards to her brother, being kin doesn't always mandate that we have caring relations, right? We know that in real family, there is our aspiration of the strong family, and then there is like what happened at my house this morning as I was trying to get out the door. So here we bump into two nuances or limits or just complexities that I'd like you to hold with me with this metaphor of family. Because yes, it is true that we were to treat every human being as a member of our extended clan, as if they were a member of our own family, maybe we would become exhausted, right? Maybe we would just need to lay down and not get up. And second, yes, family doesn't always guarantee that we will be our best selves in our relationships. And still, I think that Channing's Great Family of All Souls remains one of the best metaphors and one of the most powerful ethical imperatives I know of to do as the sages have taught us for centuries, which is to love our neighbors as ourselves. In his book, Bread for the Journey, the late Henry Nouwen, who's a great writer and spiritual teacher, he writes about what it means to be a neighbor, and he cited the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is so familiar, but he said, "My neighbor is simply the one who crosses the road for me." He writes, "We become neighbors when we are willing to cross the road for one another. There is so much separation and segregation that we have a lot of road crossing to do. We are all very busy in our own circles. We have our own people to go to and our own affairs to take care of. But if we would cross the road once in a while and pay attention to what is happening on the other side, we might become neighbors." To become neighbors, he writes, is to bridge the gap between people. As long as there is distance between us and we cannot look into each other's eyes, all sorts of false ideas arise. We forget that our neighbors love as we love, care for their children as we care for ours, become sick and die as we do. We forget they are our human brothers and sisters, and only when we have the courage to cross the road and look in one another's eyes can we see that we are children of the same God and members of the same human family. That's Nouwen. So some years back now on StoryCorps, do I have any StoryCorps fans, NPR StoryCorps fans? Okay, I'm not surprised. There was a man named Julio Diaz who was recounting a time that he, you might say, crossed the road, but in this case it was a subway platform. And it's a sort of dramatic story because the story revolves around how he was getting off the subway one night late and he was approached by this young teenager who threatened him with a knife and took his wallet, mugged him. But the surprise really is in what happens in the next moment, and I'm going to tell you the story with his words from StoryCorps. So Diaz has just had his wallet taken by this young man. This is Diaz. So he starts to leave, and as he's walking away, the teen who's robbed him, I'm like, "Hey, wait a minute, you forgot something." If you're going to be robbing people for the rest of the night, you might as well take my coat to keep you warm. So he's looking at me like, what's going on here? And he asks, why are you doing this, man? And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. If you're willing to risk your freedom for a few dollars, then I guess you must really need money. I mean, all I wanted to do was go get dinner, and if you want to join me, hey, you're more than welcome. Look, you can follow me if you want. You know, I just felt he really needs help. So we go into the diner where I normally eat, and we sit down in the booth. And the manager comes by, the dishwashers come by, the waiters come by to say hi. And the kid was like, man, you know like everybody in here. Do you own this place? And I'm like, no, I just eat here a lot. He's like, but you're even nice to the dishwasher. And I'm like, well, haven't you been taught you should be nice to everybody? So he's like, yeah, but I didn't think people actually behave that way. So I asked him, what is it you want out of life? And he just almost had a sad face. Either he couldn't answer me or he didn't want to. The bill came, and I looked at him and I'm like, look, I guess you're gonna have to pay for this bill. Because you have my money. But if you give me my wallet back, I'll gladly treat you. So I got my wallet back, and I gave him $20 for it. I figured maybe it'll help him, I don't know. And when I give him the $20, I asked him to give me something in return, which was his knife. And he gave it to me. You know, it's funny, because when I told my mom about what happened, no mom wants to hear this. But then she was like, you know, you're the kind of kid, if someone asked you for the time, you give them your watch. I don't know. I figure you treat people right, you can only hope they treat you right. It's as simple as it gets in this complicated world. Building bridges beneath our divisions, I reach out to you, will you reach out to me? So, for most of us, as we go about our lives, the imperative to treat others as kin may not manifest as boldly and dramatically as it did for Julio Diaz on the subway platform. And truthfully, in his shoes, I'm like more with his mom. Like, I don't think I would have done that, right? And how we would have acted in that moment is shaped by many things. But I like to think of that story as a parable. A parable, like the parable of the Good Samaritan, offering us wisdom even if the details don't totally line up. Because whether or not we will have that moment or whether or not we are at the far end of the altruism spectrum, life is always offering us opportunities, moments, openings to reach out, to clasp a hand, to cross the road, to look in another's eyes, to love our neighbor as if they were our family. Whoever we are, wherever we are in our journeys, we will have a moment, maybe today, maybe after this service, or this afternoon, or tomorrow morning, or later this week, to treat another person, as one of our kiddos this morning said, with kindness. Be kind, with love. And when our chance comes, I hope we will take it by the hand. The poet writes, I mean on a Sunday, when nobody was supposed to be watching, I saw this happen, the two of them hugging. Not a secret, but not for glory. The landlord's nephew ready to stand there for the woman, like a brother, or a sister, a husband or a son, or none of these at all, a stranger who, like her, is an earthling. I am a living member of the great family of all souls, wrote Channing. May we remember this truth and live by it, now and in the days to come. Amen.